The best way to start your day. Peter St. James and Pat Kelly, 6 to 10 a.m. Good Morning New Hampshire, weekdays on 107.7 The Pulse.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try with pleasured hands
to take you in this time to
promised lands
to show you everyone. It's the time of the season for love.
What's your name? Who's your daddy?
Who's your daddy?
He rich.
Is he rich like me? Has he taken
1968.
Anytime.
Roddy Argent, Zombies. Time of the season.
What you need to live.
7:15 is the time, and it's our pleasure to welcome back. It's been a while since we've talked to Dr. Peter Nordsay from Concord Orthopedics. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, it has been a while.
Yeah,
I thought we did something to get you upset.
No.
Oh, okay.
We got too many partners now. You know, I can take my turn.
Yeah. Well, and I'm surprised that Ron Resnick and Doug Moran don't go, Mike, I'll do it.
That's right.
We got those guys.
Got to elbow those guys out of the
way.
Yeah,
pretty much. So, sports medicine.
That's correct.
Busy?
Yes.
High school or weekend warriors or college or what?
A little bit of everything. As we've talked about before, you know, it goes in waves, you know, in the seasons, obviously, for us, you know, in sports.
So what is it now? Early April, what are you?
Well, you know, people are transitioning away from skiing. You know, you do get the tail end now of, you know, those spring skiers, guys that are hurting themselves with the last couple weekends of skiing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really sports specific, you know, as people move into lacrosse and baseball and those sports are probably not quite as bad as, for instance, soccer or football for us in terms of just the injury prevalence. But each season brings different kinds of injuries. You know, baseball tends to be more upper extremity stuff. People
right.
have more elbow and shoulder stuff.
So how traumatic is an ACL with a high school kid as opposed to, you know, a 47-year-old weekend warrior?
Well, I think usually the high school kid has aspirations to play, you know, at another level.
True.
So it's usually from an emotional standpoint a little more traumatic. And, you know, also just it's just not as predictable. You know, there's pretty good studies now, you know, that now that people have looked at outcome studies with ACLs, you know, kids that want to play at the high school or college level, probably only 60 to 65% of those kids play at the level they did before. So,
really?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, for a long time we sort of misrepresented what people would do after ACL surgery. I mean, if you're a weekend warrior and just want to downhill ski or you want to play golf, it's pretty easy to get back to that. But to play college basketball or to play
at that level, sure,
I mean, the hard part is they see the, you know, the Julian Edelmans, they see the guys at the NFL level who play at a really high level after an injury like that. But I think that's the, you know, exception rather than the rule, you know, and there's pretty good studies now, this thing called the Moon data, which is basically a large, you know, multi-center outcomes that look at return to sports after high school kids, you know, tear their ACL. And obviously some of it's sports specific, you know, soccer and some of the cutting or pivoting sports are more difficult, but it's challenging, you know, because a lot of those kids, you know, I saw a girl yesterday, you know, up in our New London office who, you know, has got a scholarship to play soccer and she tore her ACL ski racing and, you know, it's really going to make a difference in terms of what happens to her in the
next
couple
years. Will the school pull the scholarship?
You know, it depends a little bit on the school. You know, she's playing at the Division III level, so it's not really truly a scholarship, but she's got, you know, a quote-unquote scholarship.
Right,
but
right,
she's
right,
recruited
right.
to play at that level.
D3 as opposed to D1.
Right. But I think in terms of usually if they commit to a Division I athlete, they'll ride them out and redshirt them for a year and then let them, you know, at least try to play again. And certainly, you know, I wouldn't say that nobody gets to play after ACL surgery, but it's not quite as successful. For instance, when I started doing this, you know, we used to tell people, oh, yeah, 90% of people get back to doing everything they did before. And we've learned from our own mistakes that that's just not true.
The thing that I know in speaking with you and your colleagues is the question is, am I going to get back to 100%? Okay.
Yeah.
That 100% number, is very elusive.
It sure is. It sure is. I mean, I think that's true of everything, you know, rotator cuff surgery. I mean, a lot of what our job is lowering expectations after surgery. I mean, everybody, yeah. I think when they think about going under anesthesia and having surgery, they want whatever it is fixed, you know, and for most people fixed means I want to be back like I was before. And,
yeah.
I think there are some things we do that do that, but it's a minority of procedures. I mean, even with total joints, we were talking about before we came on air, you know, total joints are better than what you had in terms of an arthritic knee, but people have sometimes...
You can do stuff without pain.
Right.
I mean, that's progress.
Right.
You know?
Well, some people have the misconception that they're going to have a normal knee, you know, and, you know, it's just not the way it is. You know, you can't really kneel very comfortably. Your range of motion isn't 100%. But usually in those situations, if people, as you said, are better than they were before, they're, you know, it's a home run for them. So
luckily I haven't been there, but
yeah.
Going from bone on bone
right.
to some, okay, that to me is a quantum leap.
Right.
To be
right.
able to sleep, to be able to move, right. get in and get out of the truck without pain.
Right. But even with total knees, I mean, I think the studies I was referencing that relative to ACLs, but, you know, even with total knees, the data is pretty clear that probably somewhere between 10 and, you know, anywhere, depending on the study, 10 to 20% of people aren't really happy with their total knee. They don't like the mechanical feel of it. They don't like the, you know, because there are some kind of clunking and clacking that comes with it. And some of it is expectation, and some of it, obviously, the people that are the worst going into it tend to be the best coming out of it in terms of just, you know, if people have terrible bone-on-bone arthritis and they can't get MT out of the, you know, kitchen, but without, you know, their knee hurting them,
right.
those people are really happy with a total knee. If you take a younger, sort of middle age, let's say, you know, I'll say younger because it's me, you know, if somebody in their mid-50s who is still working or on their feet all day, they may not be quite as happy with their total knee. So a lot of our work is really setting expectations and sort of making people aware of, you know, what they can expect afterwards.
So the hip, the total joint replacement, the hip or the knee,
mm-hmm.
you're always going to know that it's there, that it's not... Yeah. A hip or a knee, I mean, yeah. like it was before?
Yeah. I mean, hip, not so much. I think the hip is a little easier, believe it or not, to recover from than the total knee. There's a little bit less,
I've heard.
Of a steep hill, you know, afterwards. But, and there are, I think we see patients who feel like their, you know, hip or their knee is like it was before. So I wouldn't say that there's nobody that has that experience, but, you know, it's really variable. It's just like, you know, some people tolerate a headache and walk around with it all day and never take medicine, and other people are like, oh, my head is, you know, so
right,
it's just
right,
people's
right.
different response to sort of pain and also just their response to the different mechanics of it as well.
When the young lady you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
She sustains an injury. Is she now predisposed to suffering that same injury down the road?
Yeah, and that's one of the things, that same study that I was referencing
the
before.
Moon,
yeah, the moon data, okay. Yeah, is that, you know, if you take a...
I got to read this.
Yeah,
this,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, if you take a high school age, you know, soccer player, particularly women, and let them go back and play again, you know, they almost have a 25% incidence over the next, you know, 10 years of tearing their graft
really?
Or tearing the ACL on their opposite knee. But yeah, there's a great book. It's called Warrior Girls. It really references... you know, this sort of epidemic of ACL injuries. I think I've talked to you about it before, but, you know, really an epidemic of ACL injuries in women's soccer players. You know, now that a lot of these, you know, girls are playing or women are playing
right.
soccer year-round, you know, which is another issue, is that, you know, they just, you know, if you took a cohort of people that are playing AAU soccer together, you know, probably 20% of those kids on that team over the course of their years playing together are going to injure their ACL. So it's a really significant
now,
problem.
Why are women more predisposed to having ACL injuries than men?
Yeah, there's different theories on that, you know, and a lot of it has to do with, obviously, you know, alignment issues relative to pelvis, knee, and foot in terms of looking at just their overall sort of skeletal alignment. It has a little bit to do probably with... you know, ligamentous laxity in some women tends to be more ligamentously lax. Some of it has to do with, a lot of it has to do with their strength of their hip, believe it or not. A lot of women, particularly basketball players or jumping athletes,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes don't have the strength in their hip or their core, which puts them at more risk for ACL injuries when they land, just because their knee tends to be more prone to, for lack of a better term, buckling. But so there's sort of a lot of different reasons, but there's clarity that women are sort of more predisposed in certain sports, particularly non-contact injuries in soccer or basketball.
Non-contact?
Yeah, yeah, where they just pivot, land, or stop, and which is a common thing. But you see that even at the NFL level. I mean, when you think about, you know, I keep referencing Edelman, but, you know, Wes Welker, those guys are just cutting on the field and their knee gives out. So it doesn't always take a huge
collision. Yeah, there was a play. I think it was one of the playoff games and I don't even remember who the player was, but it was a pass to the left and he stumbled And they went, oh, boy, he hit his knee when he went down out. But when they did slow-mo, you realized the out-of-bounds did nothing. He pivoted here somehow, and the knee just boom.
I mean,
it's like, wow.
People don't realize that a large percentage of those injuries are truly what they call non-contact injuries, where their upper body's going one way and their foot is planted and just creates that torque. You know.
So how's your bedside manner? I mean, you always look like you're quick to smile, but you've got to see people that come in, 43-year-old guy, overweight. Comes in with a knee injury. Do you have to fight the temptation to go, seriously, the hell were you thinking out there?
I think that's a hard, you know, one of the harder parts of our jobs that we were talking about earlier is just setting people's expectations. And also, particularly as it relates to joint replacements, you know, it's pretty clear now that, you know, if a person's above a certain ideal body weight, then their risk of complications with surgery is much, much higher. And so it's very hard to convince that person that they need to lose the weight in order to cross the threshold of having surgery.
Yeah, but you know as well as I do, probably better than I do, there's not exactly a definite correlation between the brain and the body. Okay?
Exactly.
The brain says, hell, I can do this. Hold my beer. Watch this.
Uh-huh.
And look what happens.
Right.
And afterwards, you know, people will say, I'm an idiot. What were you thinking? It's like, no, it wasn't me. And then the excuses kick in.
Exactly.
Because we think we can do anything.
Yeah, I think that's part of the challenge, obviously, and for us in terms of people's, you know, people's recollection of what they could do 10 years earlier isn't always the same.
Man, do I know that story. I'll be doing some work outside and moving stones in a stone wall. And, you know, lift with your knees. Yeah. And all of a sudden you feel this little tweak and you're going, okay, that's going to hurt like hell tomorrow.
Right. That was not good.
But you just keep going, saying, okay, I know I'm going to pay for it later. No sense in quitting now. Oh, yeah. And it takes two hands to push out of bed. Mm-hmm. You walk like Walter Brennan for 2 days. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, okay, all better.
Yeah.
Like, God. Okay. Yeah. Did I learn? Yeah, probably not. But it's guys like me that keep guys like you in business.
Exactly. I think a lot of those arthritic knees, hips, and backs, you know, a lot of people do have cyclical symptoms, you know, even if without lifting a rock like you were doing. I mean, that's the frustrating thing for many people with end-stage arthritis is they have some weeks where they're pretty functional, and then, as you said, the weather changes or they do something physically, and then they're really struggling for 3 or 4 days, and it's kind of hard to wrap their head around why that is. You know, it seems like it should hurt all the time, you know, and interestingly, it doesn't.
So New Hampshire's population getting older. Is that a boon for your particular practice?
Yes, I think for every, you know, orthopedic practice in the country, there's a lot of data about just the baby boomers and just the number of people who are going to need, you know, joint replacements in the next 10 years is just, you know, that statistic, you know, seems like it explodes every year in terms of that. And if you just look at the number of joint replacements, knees and hips that have been done, you know, this year versus 8 years ago, you know, it's more than doubled. So it's a, you know, there's a, you know, in some ways there's a, you know, that's the gift that keeps on giving for orthopedists, obviously, in terms of that. And also just the, you know, the age of people getting their joints is tends to be, you know, a little bit younger and younger. And, you know, it used to be that it was unusual for people in their early 50s to have their hip or their knee replaced. But now,
do you encourage at that age?
No, we try to hold off as long as possible.
I was going to say,
But you think about, you know, the average age of somebody getting a total joint today versus, you know, 15 years ago or 10 years ago is very different. And part of that is technology's gotten better so that the ability for these implants to last longer, you know, 10 years ago or so, the life expectancy for a total knee might have been 98% at 10 years. Now it's 98% at 15 years. So,
you know,
but one of the reasons you try to talk people out of it when they're younger is to say, listen, you don't want to have this done again when you're 65, you know. And,
good point.
Yeah, but it's sometimes a hard conversation.
Look, I mean, my great-grandfather, I think when he was 53, 54, sitting in the rocket chair waiting to die.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the
50s. Yeah.
You know, that was the mindset. And it's like, oh, my God, I made it to 50. Woo-woo.
Yeah.
And now it's, I'm making it. We just did a story. A guy in Texas, 111.
Yeah.
Sits on his front porch, drinks Coke and whiskey, and smokes 11 cigars a day.
Yeah.
God bless you. Do whatever you want, man. But, I mean, that is, to a certain extent, the exception. But it's becoming more common.
Yeah, no, I think life expectancy, people, you know, you talk to people about that when you have a conversation about joints and their mom was there at 85, their dad was 91.
Yeah.
They, you know, they're retired. They expect to live another 20, 30 years easy, you know, whereas, you know, obviously when your grandfather was alive, that was not the case.
Oh, hell, I was thrilled when I saw 50. I went, yeah, who knew?
Exactly.
But anyway, new London office going well?
Yeah, yeah, it is.
So do you go down to Derry or you go up to...
I spend most of my time in Concord and then a little bit in New London. You know, our New London presence has been a little bit cannibalized by some of the competition in the marketplace up there. But
what? What? Do they not know who you are?
No, you know, wow. We've been there a long time. We have a strong following.
I know you
but,
have.
Yeah, so, but, you know, obviously I live in that direction. So for me, it's easy to be there. Usually I'm there typically a day and a half or 2 days a week, depending on the week.
You're probably out straight when you're up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably pretty busy.
Yeah.
Well, so what are you off to today? What's going on?
I got a little Concord today, a little office, and then some surgery in the afternoon. And then, you know, I usually have to have at least one meeting a day.
Any good surgery?
So, yeah, all the surgery's good.
Well, what's this one?
Today's an arthroscopic day, so I'm doing a little bit of shoulder surgery. I have one shoulder case and one knee case this afternoon.
But not replacement, just...
No, just
cleaning out.
Yeah, one is a rotator cuff repair, and then the other is a guy who's just torn some cartilage in his knee.
Do you have music going while you're doing it?
I do. I'm pretty low maintenance. I just let the staff decide what music they play in the room. A lot of my partners bring their own sort of music selections.
You don't bring your own?
I have several, you know, hard stops, you know, no heavy metal in the room when I'm operating, that kind of stuff. But,
somehow so. I don't see you bringing a mixtape into the...
Well, believe it or not, some of my partners do.
Do they really? So. Dr. Peter Nordsay, Concord Orthopedics. Peter, great seeing you.
Yeah, good to see you.
Look forward to having you back.
All right, thanks.
All right, we're going to take a break. Back with more.
We start your day the right way. Good Morning New Hampshire with Peter St. James and Pat Kelly. Weekdays, 6 to 10 a.m. on 107.7 The Pulse.